Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. So what is unbiased? As our guest Stacey Gordon brilliantly says, dismantling unhealthy workplaces involves so much more than just talking about it. It requires action. Uncovering unconscious bias at work and in your life, because let's be honest, it can show up anywhere, really helps you understand concepts of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and just creates an environment where you can truly thrive.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Come to Game, where we flip the script on the old-school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Welcome back to the show. I am so glad to have you here for this episode. Stacey Gordon, she's going to blow your mind. She is the CEO of a company called Rework Work. That's a tongue twister. And author of the new book, Unbiased, which will transform your thinking about what it means to have bias, how it shows up in your work and home life, and why it ultimately can have an impact on your bank account. I have to tell you a little backstory now. Stacey and I have been friends for quite a long time. We got our MBAs together at the same time. And at one time, we did actually have a small real estate business together. So we go back a little bit, but when she came out with her new book, Unbiased, I just knew we needed to have a conversation about it on this show. This is one of those episodes you're going to listen to and pass along to friends. And my goal is that we can all work together to really create a society of true unbiased so we can all be financially prosperous. So I'm so excited to bring this episode to you. I'm Shauna Compton-Game, and this is Millennial Money. Well, Stacey, I am so elated to have you on the show. Listeners don't know this, but we go way back to getting our MBAs. We share a love for entrepreneurship. Our birthdays are in the same month. So, I mean, it's basically like we're sisters, right?
Yes. We always used to joke, right? Like sisters, you know, from another mother or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, do you even remember those MBA days? I get asked a lot of questions on the show about, is an MBA worth it? And I mean, you were definitely one of the reasons, yes, because I gained a really good friend and I did learn some things. And in other ways, I'm like, wow, I spent a lot of money on MBA. And I kind of scratch my head sometimes to go, were those three letters really worth it?
Right. I mean, that's a really good question. I always tell people, the connection is what's really worth it. And so if you go through your MBA program and don't come out of it with like the name, the phone number and email address of every single person that you went into class with, you've messed up. You didn't do it right.
it's you're paying for like a giant social experience. It's just like going to college, except you're paying more and you're a little bit older. And hopefully you get something career-wise out of it. But it's really interesting to give people advice about it because I'm so in the middle about it that it's hard to say for sure. Exactly.
Yeah. I always tell people what's your reason, you know, and then I can kind of give some thoughts about that.
Exactly. Right. Well, I mean, since the MBA, you have become this incredible business owner. You're author of this new book that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about called Unbiased. And you teach about diversity, inclusion, and equity in the workplace, which are three really important things. And I think although this episode may not feel like it ties into money at first glance, I really argue that it is. So whether you work at a company or you work for yourself, these topics I think are obviously really important to your overall success, but you're the expert in this space. So I'd love to hear from you. What role do you see diversity, inclusion, equity playing into our financial success? Whether we just work for a company, we work for ourselves, or we own a business, or we own our own business, like how does this play into that?
One of the things that I enjoy most about recruiting, right? So I used to be a recruiter. I'll back up a second and say, used to be a recruiter. Now I do spend my time focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion strategies within companies. But starting off as a recruiter is where I really noticed the inequity in workplaces. And so the thing I enjoyed about recruiting was being able to help somebody obtain employment. And you might think, that's just ego. And it's like, no, a little bit, right? Like, oh, I can help someone to get a job. But it was about what you can do when you get a job, right? The difference that it makes. You can feed your family or you can't. You can keep a roof over your head or you can't. You can send your kids to college or you can't, right? Like a job, the financial stability that having a job gives you is huge. And so I think that if I had to dig a little deeper and analyze why, it might be because, you know what, I have lived a life without money. I've seen the difference that money makes in how people treat you and how you think about yourself. And we all know what money can do for a person, right? Money gives you options. Money opens doors, provides opportunities, affords you the benefit of the doubt, right? Money gives you a lot of things. And so what we see is that I think for me, the critical point was when I was recruiting, I had a gentleman that I was working with who, it was a long story, but I'll make it short, basically was going for a sales job. It was a six-figure sales job. It was a really great job. And the CEO loved him and said, yep, we're ready to hire him. I'm going to send you an offer letter in the morning. I didn't get that offer letter. And it took me 3 weeks to get him the offer letter. And the reason why was because of the unconscious bias of the board of directors who stepped in at the last minute and messed the whole process up, right? And almost cost him a job. And I had to work so much harder to get him that job. And when I thought about it, I was like, these individuals stepped in because they didn't see that this Black man deserved this job that was making this type of money. and they couldn't wrap their heads around it. And they were poking holes. They had him jumping through hoops. They were looking for all the different reasons why he should not get this job. And I was not letting it go. I was like a dog with a bone.
That's what I love about you.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And I'm going to put you on the spot just a minute, because I remember this story you told me, and you and I have different skin color. You have a very different, obviously, experience in the world than I do. I mean, we both share a female experience, but you share experience of being a Black female, which I don't have that experience. And sometimes you have shared stories with me in different settings where it's not that it shocks me, because I understand that this exists, but it's to the point of thinking, how have we not evolved? You shared this story with me, I think a couple of years ago. I don't know if you recall it, but you said you were at like a conference, I think that your husband was at, and he's an attorney, and you were, I believe, like sitting out in the waiting area or whatever it might be for him to get out of a session. And somebody came up to you and just like completely dismissed you because A, you were a woman. B, you're African American. And you had this moment, you're like, you know what? I am smart. I am worthy of being here. And I just, you know, from my perspective, being a white female, you know, I can easily see where the bias shows up. But I mean, is this something that for you, like in your own existence, that this is prevalent, like at least 9 or 9.5 times out of 10?
Yeah, you know, it happens a lot, right? And you just learn to live with it. It's just one of those things that you just learn to live with it. It's like it's going to happen. You expect it. So almost so much so that when it doesn't happen, you're surprised. Mm. You know, when someone looks you in the face and says, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you," you're like, "Wait, me? Well, I'm sorry, are you talking to me?" Like, oh, that's different. And so I think it's unfortunate, but we have learned to navigate the world in ways where we've just been taught to deal with the inequity. You know, as women, we learn to come into the workplace and not to shake things up, not to ask for too much, not to speak too much or too loud, right?
Right.
Those are things that we just start to do innately because we realize it's easier than actually, you know, going for what we want.
Yeah.
And I mean, this might take us off track a little bit, but I just watched
Let's go there.
I just watched on Netflix, and I'm going to get the name of the darn movie or show wrong, but it's like number 4 right now in Netflix. And it's this woman who, I can't remember the title of it, but everyone must have watched it because it's number 4 on Netflix. And so it's this woman who's married, and she's reflecting back on her experience with her ex and how that relationship was. And something she said, and I get it, it's fake fiction, whatever, but one of the things she said was that we learn to make ourselves small, right, as women. And not to get in the way, right? And we've gotten used to accepting less because it's just easier. And that really hit me because I was like, I feel like it's true, right? For women,
we
it's easier sometimes to just say, oh, fine, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do it, all right. And so it's the same with being a person of color. And then when you combine the two together, it really does get sticky because you're looking at the intersectionality of it all. And so I think it is why, no matter what I was doing, right, I was working as a paralegal, I worked as a realtor, I worked in financial services, I worked as a recruiter, but in every single aspect, I always was advocating for those who couldn't advocate for themselves. Because I realized, you know what, I got put on this earth, I happen to have a pretty smart brain, I can figure some things out. And I've used that to help to advocate for others.
Yeah, I love that. And I've seen you do it so many times over. It's really inspiring. Tell me a little bit about, what does this mean? What does unbiased really mean? Is there a way to realistically hope the answer is yes, but realistically cultivate this?
Yeah, I think for me, unbiased, it's about interrupting bias, right? It's about being aware that unconscious bias exists. And I remember this man like wrote, I get all these emails, right? I'm sure you do too. I get all these emails from people and, you know, they'll tell me how great what I'm doing is. And then they'll also tell me how stupid I am, you know?
Yeah, I've gotten a few of those.
Yeah. And some people will manage to do both in the same email. And you're just like, you're almost sort of have some admiration for like, wow, how did you manage to make me feel both stupid and smart?
It's a talent, I guess. Yes.
Oh my goodness. But this guy, he's like, well, you know, he doesn't believe in unconscious bias. And he goes on to write this long missive, which I pretty much I skimmed at some point. And then I was like, why am I even reading this nonsense? He started off by saying he doesn't believe in unconscious bias. I'm like, wait, this is not the tooth fairy. Hey, there's nothing to believe in. There is science. I can't have an intelligent conversation with somebody who wants to start off with something that unintelligent.
Right.
So I think that we have to first understand this is rooted in science, right? This isn't Black people making up things to make white people feel bad, right? This is about all of us, Black, white, Indigenous, everyone, right? Having unconscious bias. And for me, unbiased is about being aware of those biases, because I was very concerned about naming the book Unbiased, because I thought, oh, my goodness, are people going to think that I'm trying to say that you can, you know, remove all bias? Because right. That's not the case. Right. You really can't. So what people have to do is take the time to identify where and when their biases show up for them. And they have to then act differently, right? So that the impact that they have is no longer negative and can be positive or at least neutral. So we're operating in the system that we are socialized to behave in, and our impact always ends up being skewed negative. It just is what happens.
Right. And I like that you talk about science, because it is really rooted in science. And like you're saying, like patterns and mindsets, it just kind of keeps, getting passed down, I guess, generation to generation. And it's at that moment where you have to actually make a conscious shift or change. So how do you first recognize what biases, is it biases, biases, biases? I don't know. How do you recognize what biases you have in the first place?
You really got to be honest with yourself. And this is the hard part, right? Like, this is the part that people skip. It's so easy to see the bias in everybody else. You want to point the finger. Oh, look what that person did. Oh, look what this person said. Oh, look how they behaved, right? It's so easy for us to identify in other people. But when it comes to looking in the mirror, we all of a sudden have a blind spot and we can't see how our own behavior shows up. But it happens all the time. There's a TED Talk from Kristen Pressner, who at the time was like, I think, head of HR for Roche, like the
yeah, okay. Skincare?
Yeah, the, what do you call that? Yeah, pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. And she said, right, she's an HR person. Guy comes into her office and says, hey, you know, I want to talk to you about my compensation. I want to make sure I'm in alignment and that I'm being paid appropriately. And she's like, yeah, I'll look into that for you. A couple of days later, a woman comes into her office, says practically the same thing. And she goes, I think you're good.
Right? Wow.
So not till a few days after that, she's like reflecting on it. And she goes, wait, man comes in, woman comes in. I have two different responses to these people. Why? So we have to see that and realize that we don't treat people the same. We will all say, oh, of course, what are you talking about? I don't discriminate. I don't treat people differently. How dare you call me a racist? You're an awful person, right? We want to go down the defensive route. But we really have to stop. And I get it. None of us wake up in the morning and say, my job today is to make sure that Shauna doesn't get ahead. Right? Like, that's not what we do. But it's what ends up happening. because we refuse to pay attention to our actions. We refuse to identify our bias, and we refuse to do anything to mitigate it.
I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family and you want to do the best for them, but vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. That's monarchmoney.com/etm for your extended 30-day free trial.
From the gas pump to the grocery store, your utility bills and favorite streaming services, inflation is everywhere. Seriously, make it stop. Thankfully, there's one company out there that's giving you a much-needed break. It's Mint Mobile. As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order from home and save a ton, with phone plans starting at just $15 a month. During a time when every dollar makes a difference, Mint Mobile can help you save hundreds in phone bill charges throughout the year. By going online only and eliminating the traditional cost of retail, Mint Mobile passes significant savings on to you. All plans come with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Switch to Mint Mobile and get premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/switch. That's mintmobile.com/switch. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/switch.
It's Tuesday, so we have another Ask Shauna from Brandon. Brandon says, "Hi, Shauna, love your podcast. For budgeting, what percentage do you recommend to go towards housing? And what percentage do you recommend to go towards investing? Thank you so much." Well, Brandon, I like it. You're my type of guy. You're just direct to the point, which I love. Thank you so much for being a podcast listener. And this is a really great question because there's lots of ways to think about this one. And unfortunately, there isn't an exact number because it really does change depending on your own situation. But there are a couple of ways to think about this. There are a couple of those standard rules, if you were, or guidelines. You may have heard of the 50-20-30 budget split. This is something, if you read articles, listen to other podcast episodes, you probably have heard about this, but it's just a guideline to help you figure out where your budget might be out of sorts and how you can kind of shape all of your expenses to fit in this. So the 50 stands for 50% of your take-home pay should go to your fixed expenses, and that is everything from housing to credit card minimum payments to your car payment, student loan payment, anything that you absolutely have to pay in a month, 50% of your take-home pay. Then the next 20% of your take-home pay should be for savings. And that is everything from your emergency fund to investment savings, includes matching funds if you have a 401k with a company. And that's your travel savings, whatever, Christmas savings, whatever, should be lumped into that 20%. And then the last 30% of your take-home pay should be for all of those variable expenses, eating out, shopping, going to concerts, all of the things that you love to do but aren't necessarily necessities. And what you often find is that, or what I find is that most people are heavy, maybe 50, 60, maybe even 70% on the fixed, and then the rest is over on variable expenses. Or you might see it the other way, where variable expenses is really high, but what we tend to leave out is that 20% of savings. And so this isn't, again, for you to have your budget in these exact proportions. So if you can only save 2% each month for savings, or 5% or 1%, whatever it is, it's better than nothing. But this just gives you a little rule of thumb. And then there's another old standard rule that you should spend no more than 30% of your gross income on housing. The rule is a bit outdated, but could serve as a guideline for you. Here are some ways that I just think it doesn't quite make sense. Let's say you are a high income earner, maybe you make $250,000 a year. If you follow this rule, it would advise you spending around $6,200 on rent or home ownership costs. That's 30%, but that might be way too high of a number considering other expenses that you have. It also doesn't take into account your full money picture. Do you have debt? Do you have student loans, alimony, child support? What about retirement savings? So you need to think really realistically about your situation and what makes sense, keeping in mind all of the other financial obligations and goals that you have as well. I like to try and keep housing closer to 20 to 25% and then leave room for investing, savings, and other money goals, traveling. Obviously not right now, but traveling is one of those goals that I always add into my budget. Plus, I like to build in what I call an oh shit percentage, if you will, excuse my French, into the budget each month because shit happens. And I like to leave a definitely some sort of padding in there above and beyond whatever I'm saving for emergency funds, because stuff's going to happen just like this quarantine. Nobody saw this really coming. Not to say that we're going to go through something like this again. I don't know. If you have a crystal ball, please let me know. But stuff's going to happen. And so leaving a little extra padding in there, and I tend to just take that from the housing budget and try to keep my housing budget as low as humanly possible. Of course, still I've got to live in a place and I want to live in a place that I enjoy, but get where I'm going with that. And then investing is just the same way. I like to stay around 10 to 15%, but sometimes that number isn't feasible given other goals. So that's where you could use that 20% marker, if you will, and just lump in all of your savings in there as just a guideline to check and see where you are with your savings. So hopefully, Brandon, that gave you a little bit of guidance. Again, just make sure that whatever number you choose, you're balancing it out with your other financial obligations so you aren't just literally heavy on the housing expenses, and that you do have room in your budget for your other goals and the other stuff that I know you want to do. There is a lot more we need to talk about, so let's jump back into the conversation. And yeah, in that example that you just gave, the woman could be vastly underpaid for her position, and the man could be, I'm just making up scenarios here, so don't hold me to this, but the man could be vastly overpaid or rightly paid, or vice versa. It could be any combination of scenario, but what you're illustrating is just in that bias that showed up, how she was responding to each person could have a great impact, not just on right now in their career, how much money they make, but that definitely trickles down to your future, how much wealth you can build, how well you can take care of your family. I mean, when you start thinking about the impact, financially speaking, that could be huge.
It is huge. It is huge. In fact, forget the exact stat, but it's something like a 1% difference in income over time when you add in inflation and when you look at the raises and the things that you get and compound it, the difference between the two over time is huge. So in the beginning, you think, oh, 1%, that's nothing. Okay, who cares if a woman is paid 1% less than a guy? But over time, every time you get a raise, every time you get a bonus based upon that initial compensation, right, the gap between the two widen considerably over time. So even a 1% change is huge. Can you imagine what it actually is? What is it, 23% in most cases?
Yeah.
So, and for women of color, it's far larger than that. It's like 35%. So that is it's such a skewed and large percentage point that you can't even really wrap your head around it. And so it's easier to just say, oh, that's just fiction.
Right.
You know, and and we're talking about, you know, the financial impact of inequity. You know, I constantly use the example of Salesforce, right, who attempted to fix their pay equity problem. But at the same time, they have a racial discrimination problem in their company. So that's a perfect example of how you can be doing something good in one area and completely messing it up in another.
Right. And the two things together just almost cancel each other out.
Right.
I would imagine. Right. So there's no headway being made.
Yeah. Or what happens is, you know, there's headway for a certain sect of people, because again, if you're fixing pay equity, great. All of the, you know, be real, all the white people is like, great. Oh yeah, we got our pay fixed. We're getting a raise. But then you've got all these people of color who are being discriminated against. Right. So they might have their pay equalized, right? Mm-hmm. But they're not even in the job they're supposed to be in because of discrimination. You see? Right. In the job you're in, that works, but you shouldn't have been in that job in the first place. You should have been in this other job. You never got promoted. You didn't get advanced to where you should have been and where your pay then should have been.
Right. Wow. When you start really peeling the layers back of the onion, it gets really, I don't know what the right word is, scary, interesting. So let's say you're working for a company and you're listening right now, and maybe you notice in your company there is some bias. What are some of the ways that you can, I don't even know if it's a process of rooting it out or overcoming those biases. Like, what do you do if you're in that situation?
I think the way that we, you know, have to be able to address bias is you've got to be able to first identify it. So the book, right, is based upon this framework where we start with awareness. We start with awareness because you have to first know what it is that you're dealing with. You can't address bias if you don't know it's there, and if you won't admit that it's there, if you won't look into it. And so we have to start by admitting that bias is a thing and that we all have it. And I know that sounds simple, like, oh, okay, sure. But that's the hard part. That's the part people just can't seem to overcome. Because once you acknowledge it and you identify it, then you can interrupt it, right? Then you can, you know, when you're making decisions, you can remind yourself that, hey, I am making a decision right now, and that decision needs to be objective. So that means that when two people come into my office and ask me about pay, I need to make sure I'm giving them the same response.
Right.
So now when it happens, you're like, right, I need to be objective. I need to give them the same response so that those things don't happen. That's how you interrupt it.
And conversely, like, what if you're that person that's going in to ask about salary, and you sniff out that there might be some differences? Are there any good smart points that you should be making to kind of lay the cards on the table, if you will, that you think this is happening and you want a fair shake on this?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, right, it's never good to go in and be accusatory. So you want to go in and get information. So what you, like, I had somebody email me the other day and said, I feel like I went to my manager, I was expecting a promotion, I didn't get the promotion, and now I'm really frustrated, and I think it's maybe because of the fact that I'm female and Latina. And I said, yeah, it could be, but you're making assumptions. You don't know, because what your manager hasn't done is giving you proper feedback. So a lot of times when we go asking these questions, I want a raise. I want. Okay, that's fine. I want $1 million, but I'm going to need some kind of explanation for why that should be so, right? So if you're going in and saying, I'm expecting a raise, why are you expecting a raise? What is that based off of? Have you already had a conversation with your manager that lays out what it takes to get the raise? And the answer is usually no. And then what happens is you expect to get the raise and you don't get it, or you expect to get the promotion and you don't get it. And then your manager doesn't even tell you why. So what are you supposed to go back and fix? How could you possibly say that, well, I didn't get the raise because of discrimination, when you don't even know what it would take to get the raise?
That's good. I like that. Right. So you've got to do some of the legwork, some of the investigative work ahead of time to at least know, what are the parameters? Am I fulfilling those parameters before you even get to the bias piece?
Right.
To know that for sure, right?
Exactly. And getting buy-in and agreement, right? So it's like when I used to do career coaching and we would talk about, I want X salary, and that they say they can't afford it now. Okay, fine. But you want the job. Make sure in your offer letter, it states that you will be revisiting this conversation about your salary in 6 months. Get it in writing. What happens is we talk. We love to talk and sit around and chat about these things. That's great. But you talk about it with your manager. Your manager says, oh, yeah, in 6 months, we'll discuss it. In 4 months, your manager quits.
Right.
Now what? You have no recourse. You have nothing in writing anywhere. So the thing is that managers have to do a better job of being transparent about what it takes to get to that next level. And most managers have not been trained properly, have not had professional development experience to know how to even do that. And so they've got imposter syndrome in their jobs. And so when you come in and start questioning them, you're telling them that they don't know how to do their job, which is probably accurate, and puts them onto the defensive. And now you have a situation that is toxic instead of one where people are working together.
Right. And I would imagine that scenario probably happens a lot. I can think back of, I had one corporate job, definitely not the corporate type, but I had one corporate job, and I could see that scenario being played out over and over and over again. So I think that's amazing, amazing seller advice. So obviously, the last year has been a crazy year. You write this book, Unbiased. Tell me a little bit about the story of the book. What made you decide, okay, I've got to write this book. I've got to write it now. People need to hear this.
I think it's really, because as I mentioned before, it's based on the framework, right, that I use with my team, and we're working with executive teams, people managers, hiring managers, even HR teams, right, to educate them about their practices, their policies, procedures of their workplaces. And the framework starts with awareness, right, which is a state of visibility and insight into the areas that need to be addressed. And I had to write it because I was having so many conversations with clients where they were missing this piece. They were skipping awareness, going straight to action, and just diving in and wanting to do these things that really end up coming off as performative and will have some positive short-term impact, but not long-term sustainability, which is why the framework ends with advocacy, which is a desired state, right? The state of continuous review in order to achieve sustainability. And you can't get there without starting with awareness instead of jumping into action. So I wrote the book really to kind of outline that and give people a framework for where to start and how to finish.
The finishing part is really important.
Right.
Well, I think I would argue that it's important for anyone to read. I read through it and there's so many different gems in there. You know, I was thinking about this last year. I read the book, How to Be Anti-Racist. Mm-hmm. And it was eye-opening for me because just like what you were saying, where I was like, well, I'm not racist. I don't, you know, I don't discriminate. And then when you read the book and it's like, oh, it's actually like how not to be anti-racist, like how to really live this on a daily way and how to change behavior and even a lot of these unconscious biases that kind of exist within us. And so I think your book on bias is sort of that same or in that same sort of category. It's not just to say, well, I don't have a bias. It's like, how do you actually practically live out an unbiased life, whether it's in the workplace or not? And I think that's what's really important. And you sort of mentioned it, but really important to focus on is like, you know, and like you said, it's not that you can ever, I think, wholly arrive at that one solid place,
right?
But it's a start. Right. And I mean, many of us need to at least have that start.
Yeah, definitely.
And what sort of, have you seen any shifts? I mean, particularly over the last year where a lot of companies have been, or at least from my vantage point, you probably have a different vantage point, but have been focusing on, or at least saying that they're focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion, whether they're doing it or not. I don't really know. But I mean, have you seen anything change? Are we sort of still in the same place that we were before?
Gosh, we have seen a lot of up and down, right? A lot of focus. And then it's like, oh, maybe not so much focus. But I think that roller coaster it's still all been surface level. We haven't really gotten to the deep work, the important work, the level of introspection that is necessary for this to stick. And it's like everyone wants to remain in comfort. It's like looking at these tough topics, admitting the truth about the workplace is difficult. And because the majority in charge haven't been affected, they haven't had to do anything about it. But with the pandemic highlighting the inequity in the workplace, I think that is what is sparking change. People want to point to George Floyd as the catalyst, and his death was an eye-opening and jarring event. But I think it's the pandemic that has sustained the focus on equity. Because when the inequity was only about Black versus white, nothing changed, right? We talk about it, there's some rumblings. But with the pandemic, it showed that the inequity wasn't only about Black versus white, that it was about essential service workers versus office workers, privileged individuals who have access to laptops and high-speed Wi-Fi and technology and tutors versus the have-nots. And a lot of white individuals realized, wait, we're also classified as the have-nots, and they didn't like it. So in what the pandemic highlighted was that it's not just about Black people being marginalized and underpaid, that it was crossing, I think, a lot of intersectionality. And so I think that realization is what has kept the possibility of change open as an option.
Right. Because, I mean, we've even seen so many companies now, first they were saying, nope, we're going to go back. We're going to be in the office. We're going to everybody there. And now we're seeing a lot of shift back to like, well, you know, we could do some work at home, some here, and some are like, well, you get to choose, you get to pick. And I never imagined that we would have a moment in time where global companies would be changing their whole work-life balance, their whole work model. But maybe that's a good thing that's come out of this. And I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Does that put people more on equal footing, or does that still create that unbiased? Because then we've got, like you're just saying, the high speed internet versus not, people with laptops, people who don't, people have an office to work in their house and people who don't. Like, where does that leave us?
I think we're always going to find ways to exclude people who are different than us. It is how we are hardwired. It is why I talk about interrupting bias, because no matter where we are, we could get put on the moon tomorrow and we will find a way to categorize, okay, you moon people over here and you non-moon people over there, right? Like, Right. That's just what we're going to do. So being in the workplace or not in the workplace, it doesn't matter. We really got to focus on how are we treating people? Because I had someone say to me like, oh, well, do you think that because there are more people working from home, that there's less discrimination? Because now that I'm on Zoom calls and people aren't necessarily even logging in and showing their cameras, she said, well, I feel like I'm discriminating less or that there's less bias. And I was like, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. We discriminate and we make assumptions about people based upon their voice, right? Based upon how they sound. Once we started working from home more frequently in the middle of the pandemic, we started discriminating against people based upon what we could see in their backgrounds. I had people say, well, I'm not going to hire this person because they're doing their interview from their bedroom and they should at least find a quiet, you know, professional space in the middle of a pandemic.
Wow.
Like you're judging this person in the middle of a pandemic. Like I was like, oh my God.
Wow. All right. You're right. You're right. I mean, it's almost inescapable. Wow. Well, we've talked about so much really important topics that we could talk about for hours longer, but I really love to end each episode with something actionable. If you have a tip, a strategy, a tool, something that you feel like we really need to walk away with, at least thinking about when it comes to unbiased, what would that be?
I would say that, you know, you don't have to be the leader of an organization to make a difference. You can have positive impact today, right? Today. You can buy my book today, so that's always great. But you can pay attention to the inequities that play out all around you and interrupt them. So that means you're about to jump onto a Zoom call later today with people from your office. Do you know all of these individuals? Have you taken time to get to know them? And I think it's important to realize that we've got to start building relationships with our coworkers because we think that coworker is a relationship status and it's not, it's a label. Just because we show up to work in the same place every day doesn't make us connected. So a lot of what we're trying to do has to start with some relationship building. And that means getting to know people who are different than you. It means reaching out and really taking the time to get to know the different people on your team, new people who've come into the workplace. There are people who got onboarded in the middle of the pandemic who you've never actually met in person. We got to start spending time including people because it's too easy to exclude and go, I've got my little clique over here. I've got my people. I don't need to add any more people to it. We got to change that up.
Well, you're definitely one relationship that I'm very happy that I have. I would love for you to tell everyone listening, I'm sure there are some very eager ears, where can they go to buy a copy of your book, Unbiased? And if they want to connect with you, how do they find you?
So you can definitely find my book on Amazon, but I know some people have issues with Amazon. I get that. You can find it in Barnes & Noble. You can find it in any of your independent booksellers. I know that some companies have made a point of buying it from Black-owned and female-owned independent bookstores, so I definitely co-sign that. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you're following me there, I share a ton of resources all the time, so you'll definitely want to follow me on LinkedIn. I'm Stacey Gordon. You can follow Rework Work, which is my company, on all the other platforms. So Instagram, Twitter, on LinkedIn, and on Facebook, it's all Rework Work. So you'll find me there. And we're rolling out a whole new course about the why of DEI. So if you're a leader and you're struggling with why this is important for you, you definitely want to sign up at Rework Work for our Why of DEI course and put that on your professional development list.
I think my biggest takeaway is that even when we feel like we don't have a bias, we probably do. And that bias can have a lot of ramifications. I think that's really where I'm left after this conversation. And maybe you've been on the receiving end of a bias and it led to a missed opportunity or a loss of income or even worse. And my hope is that we can work together and figure out finally how to change this. And I don't know about you, but I'm just so glad that we have people like Stacey out there doing this good work. So if you enjoyed this episode, share it with friends, family members, anybody who you think needs to embrace this idea of unbiased. And as always, you can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guests and our sponsors. And hey, be sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you make sure you never miss a new episode.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com, where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.